listening to All About Jack C.S. Lewis podcast. I'm William O'Flaherty from EssentialCSLewis.com. And the program today is the third in a series about C.S. Lewis and women. Last time, the specific issue examined was the relationship Lewis had with various women in his life. So if you haven't listened to it, you will want to check the show notes of this episode to find a direct link to it, or to stop back by EssentialCSLewis.com and check the All About Jack podcast archives. In this third program, the topic is what the female characters in Lewis's fiction say about his views on women. Due to time limitations, the focus will likely just be on Narnia. However, you can read about nearly all the females that Lewis created by checking out Dr. Crystal Hurd's website. That address is crystalhurd.com. If you've been listening to this mini-series so far, then you know already that Dr. Hurd is my special guest for these programs. Welcome back to the show, Crystal.
It's a pleasure, William. Thank you.
Also, there is a guest co-host joining us again. Her name is Gina D'Alfonso. Welcome back to the show, Gina.
Thank you.
If you're not familiar with either of my guests, be sure to listen to the earlier programs in this mini-series to find out more about them. I've already told you the topic of today's and the previous shows, and if you haven't heard the debut program, allow me to briefly mention what you missed. That first show was an overview of the entire series and included short answers to a variety of subjects that the rest of the series examines in more detail, including what we're doing today. Of course, as already mentioned, the greatest detail you can find is by visiting Crystal's site. Her first name is spelled C-R-Y-S-T-A-L, and the last name is spelled H-U-R-D, crystalhurd.com. Before starting with the questions, I want to let everyone know that if you are trying to find the material on Crystal's website for the majority of this program, it is week 9 on her post on her blog, Lewis and Women. Having said that, the previous post to it examines portraits in the Pilgrim's Regress, which is Lewis's first work of fiction and his debut Christian title. That's material we're not going to cover at all. Now, if time permits, we might briefly discuss either a female character or two in the Ransom Trilogy or Till We Have Faces. However, there is more than enough to discuss related to Narnia, so again, visit crystalhurd.com for that material. And as mentioned before, you can check the show notes at essentialcslewis.com for direct links. With all that out of the way, let's consider the first question. Gina, I'll let you get us started with that.
Okay, thanks. Several well-known authors have made statements suggesting that Lewis's portrayal of females in Narnia is a little less than ideal. Can you share a couple of those?
Sure. Let me give you a couple off of my website. This post actually has several, including J.K. Rowling. And I'm going to actually read you a couple, one from Philip Pullman and one from John Goldthwait. Philip Pullman says, "Boys are better than girls. Light-colored people are better than dark-colored people, and so on. Susan, like Cinderella, is undergoing a transition from one phase of her life to another. Lewis didn't approve of that. He didn't like women in general, or sexuality at all, at least at the stage of life in which he wrote the Narnia books. He was frightened and appalled at the notion of wanting to grow up." Of course, a lot of overstatement and generality there. Yeah, exactly. Let's listen to Goldthwait, who sort of echoes very similar to what Pullman says. "Lewis had no difficulty mating beavers happily, but whenever we find him placing a man in proximity to a woman or in situations that might suggest a muse relationship, it is to expose the pairing as unnatural and wicked. Lewis feared women and disliked them categorically. The actual provocation for executing these 7 novels sprang from his need to put a woman in her place, or 2 women, perhaps, or all of them." So very, very scathing criticism from 2 male authors reflecting on Narnia.
Well, now, obviously, you disagree with those opinions, Crystal. In fact, on your blog, you say, and I'm quoting you, "When I hear or read negative gender criticisms on Lewis, my first thought is that a close reading has not been given to the text." In that spirit, what would you tell us about the good parts of, say, for example, Susan's character that many seem to be overlooking?
Well, I think Susan, when we discuss Susan, there's a lot of focus on the last battle. And not a lot of focus on some of the other great aspects she has. I think one of the more obvious aspects is that she's very mothering. In the absence of her parents, she sort of becomes the mother. She watches out for her brothers and sister. She's sort of taking care of them, making sure that they make the right decisions, don't get hurt. She's also very compassionate. She's very caring. And honestly, she's very loyal to her brothers and sisters and to Narnia through most of the stories. I mentioned in the blog that she's almost attacked by a bear, and she doesn't even want to kill it because she respects the animal so much. So she honestly is not a terrible character in the rest of the series. I mean, she's a very loving, gentle character.
And you also mentioned that in the debut show that we don't know what happened to Susan. She didn't die in the story.
Right. The others actually do sort of pass away in a train accident. And Susan, we're told, was not with them. So Susan still has an opportunity to cross into Aslan's country at a later point. Her moment of decision has not arrived yet. So she still has the opportunity to do that at a later time.
Mm-hmm. That's true. And that seems to be something that everybody always overlooks. So I'm glad you brought that up. Mm-hmm. In our first episode, you talked about how Lucy, the youngest member of the family, is clearly an example of a strong female character. Can you talk some more about that?
Absolutely. I think I give Lucy full credit for our introduction to Narnia. Obviously, her belief is what introduced her to Narnia, and she's such an amiable, likable character. Even Mr. Tumnus, hates to, when he turns her in later to the White Witch, he hates to do that. He immediately feels guilty about it because she's such a likable and honest and caring, person. Of course, I think one of the things that we like about Lucy the most is her faith, her indomitable belief in Aslan and in Narnia. And she has this unwavering devotion to Narnia and to Aslan and what he represents. And a lot of times I've heard people say, right now I'm an Edmund, but I want to be a Lucy. it's like, it's a nice sort of metaphor for, where we want to be. We want to sort of recapture the childlike faith, and that's what she has, that you sort of sometimes lose over your lifetime. So I think she is a very strong character. I think she becomes almost like a leader to her brothers and sisters, even though she's the youngest female.
Now, Crystal, Jill Pohl is not usually high on the list of favorite female characters from Narnia, but what can we learn from her and how Lewis viewed women?
Jill's a really interesting character. What I like about her the most is her development, too, as a character. Of course, in The Silver Chair, she is the one who is entrusted with the four signs. Not a male, but a female is instructed by Aslan is essentially given the directions, the roadmap, for how the adventure will unfold, and it's her responsibility to make sure these things are done so they can recover Prince Rillian. In the last battle, we see a lot of growth. She's about 16, I believe, in the last battle, but we see her hunting. She's very good with a bow. She knows her compass points, so she's able to guide the rest of the party. She rescues Puzzle, who was, formerly working with Shift, the ape, and is sort of taken advantage of. So Jill is the one who insists that they incorporate him into their camp. So all of these things sort of show her compassionate yet tough side. And so she's a nice, I think, well-rounded character.
Now, yet another female character from Narnia is Erebus from The Horse and His Boy. What does she show us about Lewis's perspective on women?
I believe that Erebus is actually my favorite female character right now out of Narnia for a couple of reasons. One, she is tough. Of course, this was this book was written later. So at this point, Lewis had been developing relationships with female correspondents as well as other talented females like Ruth Pitter. And at this point, he was becoming around to a new idea of women, a little more well-rounded, a little more sort of balanced. And so we sort of see that in Erebus. When we first meet her, she's wearing her brother's armor. She takes charge of her destiny by running away when she's put into when she's basically forced into a marriage. And then, as we all know, later in the book, it's her eavesdropping on a conversation of the Tarkon that leads to the information they need to be ready for an attack. So it really, in that story, she is a pivotal character throughout the entire book. And she's a tough character too, which is good. She, you know, she doesn't take a lot off people.
So, that's true.
but she's not, you know, irritating or tiresome. You know, she just is a different, she has a backbone, she has an opinion, and she's been through a lot, even in her young age. But she still has a very strong sense of, you know, of herself and her identity. So, it's a really nice, change, I think, in some of the characters. And I think it's definite contradiction to what a lot of the folks were saying when I quoted at the beginning.
Well, Crystal, let's consider one of the negative females in Narnia. In our first podcast in the mini-series, you talked about the White Witch briefly. We won't directly visit that. I trust listeners can go back and catch the program if they haven't already. But let's consider from the Silver Chair what you think of Lewis's portrayal of the Queen of the Underland.
She's very interesting because when we first meet her, she is in the form of a beautiful woman. She's very attractive, and they basically stop and ask her for directions, and she basically leads them right into the giant's lap because she knows they're going to be supper later for the giants. And that way she's very deceptive, and she sort of comes across as an ally at first, but then later they realize that she is actually the same woman who's holding Prince Rillian captive. Interestingly here, I think, to note is that later on, a lot of the voice of the skeptics are sort of heard through her voice, or through her words. Particularly, she questions the existence of the sun and the, you know, the existence of a land above, you know, the underworld. And it's very interesting that he actually puts those words into her mouth. And basically says, well, the sun is just a big lamp, and, you know, your lion is just a big cat. These are all exaggerations. You know, you aren't, you know, satisfying my rational argument for the existence of these things. But it's very interesting that he puts very intelligent arguments in a woman's mouth. And I think that's important to note as well.
In your post about the Ransom Trilogy, or the Space Trilogy, as some people call it, you say, Lewis argues that male and female are distinctions of gender, but not of value. Can you elaborate a little on that?
Yes, that's a loaded question. But I will say this, a lot of people who have read Lewis will know that he's written on equality. And he mentions, he compares equality to clothing, to medicine, and not as essential to human life. And what he means by that is, and I believe he's getting his cue from 2 Corinthians chapter 12, which talks about the body of Christ, and that everyone plays a different role in the body of Christ. Some people are arms, some people are legs, some people are toenails. He actually says that in a letter. He says that in a letter to one of his correspondents. He says, you know, if you are a toenail, then be the best toenail you can be.
I love that.
If you think about this in mind, it's not saying, you know, the arm is better than the toenail. It's just saying that there are different roles. And again, I, having studied leadership and in my degrees in leadership, I think a lot of these things get misconstrued because people think, well, if this person is in charge of this other person, he's better than that person. And that's simply not true, at least in the eyes of the Bible. We're all servants of God. And really, if you look at Jesus's example, he was a servant leader. So really, the leadership is not about privilege, but about sacrifice. So that people who are in leadership are really almost servants to the rest, you know, to the rest of the body. Really, it's about sort of serving one another. So if you look at leadership that way, it's more of a giving process and not a taking process or a dictatorial, almost tyrannical way of looking at it. You know, and then that way, we have to understand that value has nothing to do with our inequalities. He mentions that, you know, we're all not equal. Some people are just naturally better at things than others. And that doesn't mean that they're better people. It just means that they have certain things that they are blessed with. You know, some people can sing, some people can't. Some people can draw, some people can't. And those things are just sort of natural, you know, natural differences in our characters. I think it shows more the artistic brilliance of God and sort of his, you know, his talent at diversity. But it's not supposed to be, and can be. I think Lewis would argue that the fall has done this to us, has made us impose some sort of value on those differences. But the thing is, they aren't. God loves men and women equally. He has a hierarchy. I mentioned that in the first show, sort of the Milton's hierarchy. And there has to be some sort of, you know, government or, you know, leadership in place for all of us. I mean, I think Plato even talks about that. You know, we need some sort of type of government type thing over us so we can sort of have order and understand how things are ruled. But in the end, Lewis doesn't mean that women are less than men. He just means they're different.
Well, unfortunately, in the spirit of keeping these shows relatively short to maintain interest, we are going to have to end with that last comment. As previously mentioned, you will want to not only make sure you listen to all of the shows in this mini-series, but also visit Crystal's website. Again, that's crystalhurd.com to read about the subject in greater detail. Well, speaking of Dr. Hurd, I want to thank you, Crystal, for lending your expertise on this and the other shows.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
And of course, next, thanks goes to Gina for assisting me with hosting duties.
Thanks. It's been fun.
Well, now remember again to go by centralcslewis.com for links in the show notes to Crystal's website and her blog series, along with links to other shows in the series, as well as some places you can find Gina online. Next time, we're going to be looking at three women in Lewis's life and wrapping things up. That'll be the three women looking specifically at Ruth Pitter, Dorothy Sayers, and, of course, the woman that Lewis married, Joy Davidman. Also want you to consider visiting essentialcslewis.com as often as possible, as I have a daily fact, quote, and quiz question about him, along with other features besides the All About Jack podcast. But speaking of the podcast here, some of the previous guests include Colin Duryea and Devin Brown, as well as Douglas Gresham, one of C.S. Lewis's stepsons. Finally, in closing, I'm William O'Flaherty, the producer and director of the show, reminding you that EssentialCSLewis.com is a feature partner site of the Middle Earth Network.